Welcome to The Revenue Architects. I'm your host, Jeff Ignacio. In this podcast, we're going to bring incredible business athletes together. We'll explore how to build a go-to-market capability for businesses, no matter the size or shape. We'll remix content from a bunch of different places, bring in guests, deep dive into incredible topics. So with that in mind, I want to thank you for joining us. And now on to this episode of The Revenue Architects. Today, we have Kyle Himmelreich, who is the Director of RevOps at Yelp, based in Phoenix, Arizona, not too far away from where I am in Los Angeles. Now, prior to Yelp, Kyle has held a variety of sales and RevOps and strategy roles across companies ranging from startups to multinational, including Optimize, Fiat Industrial, and the Novo Group. Kyle enjoys solving complex business problems at scale, often with a focus on marrying technology with process. Kyle went to undergrad at Valparaiso University, where he played football and holds an MBA from the Villanova School of Business. Kyle, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you, Jeff. It's always a pleasure chopping up with you, man.
Yeah, we had a really good time last year with Rosalind Santa Elena over at Clary. We did a little RevOps session for the Revenue Collective, and that's how you and I met.
Yeah. Between the two of you, it's quite the vast ocean of information. But yeah, it's always good to get on, you know, get on some more wavelengths with people of like-mindedness. And I think the revenue space, revenue operations space, is such an interesting one, and it's such an evolving one. And really right now, it's such a hot topic. It's really exciting to see all of this really explosion of information, and I think curiosity and intrigue around the position. I'm looking forward to chatting with you today.
So I gave a little introduction about you, but tell us a little bit more about, you know, who you are, what you do, and how you ended up where you are at Yelp.
Yeah, absolutely. So I I'll say this in air quotes, but a fairly traditional path into sales operations. So I started, I played football in college, and coming out of college was a bit unsure of what I wanted to do. And so, you know, being a fairly outgoing and an exceptionally competitive person, sales was a pretty good fit from that perspective. And so I left college and did 2 years in tech sales. And it was great. But what I was surprised about is I found myself really being drawn to like the back end of sales, understanding the why. I was less interested in getting up and knocking down doors every day. And I was more interested in understanding like what are all the components that go into it and the systems that support it. And so I had an opportunity to join a startup, the Novo Group in Chicago, as basically their blanket first business analyst hire. And really backed myself into a position I had no business being in, which was essentially building their entire sales infrastructure from the ground up. And so it was a really informative experience for me. I got my first exposure to Salesforce and, you know, what building a CRM looks like, what a crap data set looks like, how do you get from, you know, a mess to something that resembles usable data. So I was there for a couple of years, then relocated back east, where I'm from Philadelphia originally. Went to work at Fiat in the industrial side of their organization in their global sales operations and consulting group. Was there for a couple of years, about 4.5 years, and worked in that time, did my MBA at Villanova, and then got into software with Optimize. And Optimize was a really interesting situation because they were an existing sales operations consulting firm that was basically had built out a proprietary technology and was looking to pivot into being a SaaS software company. And so I fell into the situation of being one of the first operational hires to scale the business. But we had this whole dearth of resources and money, right? Like it was really cool because it was like, hey, we're building something new, but we have the resources to do it. So was there for a little over 4 years, met my wife in business school, and she's from Arizona originally. So we relocated here to Arizona, and now I am the Director of Revenue Operations with Yelp. And so I oversee supporting our the largest part of our business, which is our local sales organization, which is about a $700 million business unit, and really have been working to modernize and evolve that organization here at Yelp. So that's sort of I've been in revenue operation or you know, sales operations and what is now revenue operations for the majority of my career, have been in a lot of different verticals and in a lot of different types of business. So I've seen the different applications of it. And it's just a fascinating and ever evolving space.
So that's really incredible for a couple of reasons. One, local as a space was a fairly hot investment thesis for many VCs quite a few years ago. When I was at Google, they were focusing on, okay, we have this maps infrastructure. How do we put in local reviews? And how do we start thinking about local as a business strategy to go after? Mm-hmm. Yelp was one of the first companies that I saw on websites out there that I looked to religiously on Friday nights, Saturday nights, as I was considering, where am I going to have dinner? And I always try to understand, you know, the business model behind Yelp. So given that Yelp is pervasive and quite utilized, at least here in North America, you must be tackling quite a huge data set. Tell me a little bit about that, that infrastructure, because you're one of the few guests that's come on that has probably access to something as massive and as huge as every restaurant and every diner's habit in the country.
Yeah, and it's really quite fascinating. I mean, you're spot on as always with the data sets are incredible. And you know, I think Yelp uses obviously our CRM is Salesforce, and that is our central. That's like our central hub for a lot of our data, coupled with our Yelp basically homegrown system. And it's really an exercise in, we have a ton of data available to us. And so the trick really is, you know, what are we trying to solve and what are we doing with the data, right? Because I think in a lot of ways, the dream is always to have this ocean of data, but if you don't really know what to do with it and you don't really know how to drive business decisions by it, it can be quite paralyzing in that way, because you look at it, you can slice it probably five different ways depending upon the story you're trying to tell, right? And so I think one of the areas that is particularly important in my job is really understanding kind of the audience that I'm working with and the stakeholders that I'm working with, and what are they, you know, number one, what is the problem we're trying to solve? And number two, what do those folks care about, right? So we have a business operations group, and they really look at, they're really interested in churn. They're really understanding it. They're interested in how many businesses are we bringing in every month? How many businesses are churning every month? What is our, you know, are we net positive, negative there? What is our LTV, lifetime value of our customers, and those types of things, right? So that is, you know, starkly different than say what our customer success organization is looking at, which is, you know, what is our CSAT score? What are our retention curves look like? And, you know, one of the cool things or really interesting things about Yelp is we are still a really, really heavily phone-based organization, right? And so we're able to get a whole bunch of the data from, you know, talk time, hold time, how can we optimize some of our call routing? We still our core principle is how do we meet the business owner where they are, right? And there's just so many out there. So a lot of the stuff that we work on is how do we optimize that, right? How do we figure out how to prioritize, how to, you know, how to meet the customer where they are in a way that is meaningful for them? And then how do we, you know, sort of distill what that data is telling us into something that we can continue to move forward with.
So Yelp's become a destination for the small, medium business owners. So for example, at my company, we're a B2B software. And so we can reliably use ZoomInfo, these third-party databases. But I'd imagine if I looked up the restaurant that's owned by mom and pop down the street, I probably wouldn't find them in that third-party database. But yet, if someone had a chance to get into Yelp's database, I'd imagine that mom and pop restaurant would be on the radar, which is an incredible, I guess, private data point that's proprietary to Yelp and gives it a unique advantage. So you talked about a couple of things that are interesting. You framed who is the audience, what is the problem we're trying to solve, but what happens when the audience doesn't necessarily know what problem they're solving or are trying to solve the wrong problem, but maybe you feel that and have intuition that maybe the problem needs to be reframed or reset in some ways.
I think in sort of understanding, you know, I kind of run through the three things you named there, which is like, you know, what is the, So first piece is like tackling the audience, right? Like, so how do we do that? And I think like understanding what's important to who, right? And I think a little hack that I have or something that is important to me throughout my career is I keep this little cheat sheet of just like what metrics matter to what folks. And I'm sure you could probably go through this exercise pretty quickly too, where it's like sales reps or sales, you know, folks care about X, Y, and Z. Finance folks care about X, Y, and Z. Customer success folks care about this. Marketing cares about that. And like, that's a good starting point for understanding where, you know, what your key talking points might be, particularly in a situation where, you know, you're looking at a data saying like, I don't really know what we're trying to solve here. I think another thing, and this might be very, you know, almost counterintuitive, but going to some of these meetings, it's okay to say, hey, like, what are we solving for here? And say that out loud. I think sometimes you get into meetings and everybody wants to be the smartest person in the room. You want to have complete control. But I think there's also value in coming in there and saying like, listen, let's reconfirm what we're trying to solve here, what we're trying to work towards. And, to make sure everyone's on the same page, because I myself have done this plenty of times where I'm like, I think we're solving for this. And then you go into the meeting and you present your data and it's like crickets. And you're like, whoa, okay. Well, I was way off calibration here. So I think like that setting the sort of the ground rules that you're trying to play within are really important.
I was talking to a friend yesterday who's a stand-up comedian. And the one thing that he told me was, and I used to do improv back in college, and he and I would write these, like, I was a terrible joke writer, but he would always work at these jokes, and he still does it today. And he tells it on Monday through Thursday in a different way. And then by the time he gets an opportunity to speak in front of a real crowd on a Friday or Saturday night, he has this idea of how the joke's gonna be delivered and absolutely smashes it. But that's more like waterfalling or, you know, stumbling your way into a perfect answer. And
yeah,
I don't feel like RevOps has that luxury, right? You have to set the requirements up front in advance. You can't just hack your way to a funny joke on Friday night.
No, I think that's a great analogy. And I think that's why it's important, you know, at the outset to set expectations, right? Because I think revenue operations is a role particularly where, you know, a lot of your ability to function is based on confidence, right? And it's in confidence that number one, I'm delivering, I'm answering the questions I'm being asked. Number two, I'm delivering the right answers, right? And number three, the answers that I'm giving give us a path forward or give us next steps are actionable. And so you're 100% right. And I think, you know, laying out what you're trying to solve and then coming and saying, you know, here's what we're seeing, giving a definitive answer versus, you know, trying to kind of, all right, we'll iterate back and forth on this thing. At some point, like having that decisive ability and just saying, this is what we set out to solve, and this is what that answer is really important as well, because it keeps that confidence amongst your stakeholders really at the top of mind as well. Because you don't want to be the person who's like, all right, well, I ask them the question and then we have to iterate six different times and then to finally get to the outcome. You know what I mean? Which is a great process for a comedian, not always so good for revenue operations.
So then you talked about a proprietary data set with Yelp and Salesforce, obviously. You know, what skill sets do you and your team need? Because on one hand, I imagine Salesforce administration skills and developer skills are going to be needed on the CRM side of the fence. But then you're going to need some way to download and pull the data. Are you working proprietarily through an interface with SQL and BI skill set, or are you working through some sort of middleware?
Yeah. So great question. And Yelp is unique. I guess not unique to the extent that it's a bigger company. We have a SMT organization, which is Sales and Marketing Technology, and they basically own the building of Salesforce. So as you know, as you can imagine, we have an extremely complex and very large Salesforce instance. We have an entire team that maintains that. Well, we advise on changes that need to be made as we, you know, as we update processes. My team focuses on a lot of, hey, we can alter this and sort of building out the business requirements of that piece. So as far as skill sets go, yes, having an understanding of Salesforce, understanding how it functions, understanding the limitations of it are really important. And then we also leverage SQL and Tableau are the two biggest ones. We have, like I said, we have a basically a data warehouse where the Yelp data lives. And then we are able to aggregate a lot of that and do a lot of analysis through Tableau in terms of, you know, slicing it different ways and making it, putting it in a form that's digestible and that is kind of actionable. So those are two of the bigger skill sets, which is interesting because I, coming into this, I was not admittedly a strong SQL user. So it was kind of learning on the fly in terms of, I have experience, with Salesforce and all the different, the tech stack, but that was a piece for me. It was like kind of learning on the fly, which was certainly interesting. That's the big piece is I kind of look at it. I look at handling big data sets in sort of two buckets. It's number one, how do you get all the data into a spot? And then how do you present it and, kind of distill it down into something that's actionable, right? Because there is, as you well know, you have the back end, which is kind of how the sausage is made. Like what are all the different ways we can cut our data up? And then once we sort of find what we're looking for or find a direction or an outcome, it's like, how do we then support that story and then support sort of that conclusion with the data in a way that can be looked at by someone who's not knee deep in data and then they can understand and be in support of the decision or the, the advice that we're giving.
So at Nova Group, you were a proverbial team of one. You were kind of doing mm-hmm. everything from the ground up. And then now you're at Yelp, which is obviously a publicly traded company. You have an organization called SMT where you're throwing over requirements over the fence and working with them to basically instrument what you want in return. What was the transition like from being someone who has control over the keys to the kingdom being Salesforce and all your systems, to all of a sudden now having to work in a work nicely in a play yard with someone else who you know the other side of the fence? You've been in that position where you've had the whole thing to yourself.
Yeah, no, I think it's a really good question, and I think the thing that has stood out to me the most is when you're an army of one. A team of three, you know where everything lives, you know where everybody is buried, you know how every system works together, because you've pretty much put it together, right? So you've built the Salesforce integration, you built the marketing automation on the front end, you've done the lead scoring, you've cut up the territories, right? You've done all the stuff. And so what I have learned in Yelp is the value of process documentation in the value of making sure that there is an understanding of how things work. Because as an army of one, that all lives in your head, right? And so but then it quickly becomes difficult when you bring, as you scale, it's like, how do you get, there's always this challenge of getting that information out of your head and sort of memorialized in a way that can be, shared and sort of scaled out. And I think that's the big piece for me is that Yelp, where I try to focus a lot is, hey, we really are looking at processes and saying, how do we improve this, right? How do we get from A to B? How do we improve ourselves, 30% or whatever metric we're trying to improve? It's, do we have an understanding of where we're going from, right? So what is the steady state now and what are we going to? Because that allows us to ask very pointed questions on, hey, SMT, I need you to tweak this specific piece of the process, right? Like this flag goes up when this action happens, right? When this lead goes from here to here, this thing happens. Well, we want to adjust it to accommodate that. That's much easier to do when it's well documented and everybody's coming from a position of understanding versus it just being in your head. I think that's a part of it for sure. And it just puts a really big premium on communication, right? Your ability to communicate succinctly, to be timely, and also just to be very, very articulate and very, I guess, just well defined in what you're asking for. So it's to a certain extent, it's like thinking about writing a good requirements doc. It's not something you really think about when you're thinking about like from a process perspective, but it's very, very transferable in terms of a skill set perspective.
So personal story of mine, I was a consultant when I came out of college, and the projects that I was working on were configuring SAP for the movie mm-hmm. entertainment studios. They wouldn't let me anywhere near configuration or code, but I had to learn the ins and outs of those systems to be able to create design documents, mm-hmm. functional requirements. Even before that, gathering requirements. So who, what's the project charter? What are the kind of joined outcomes that we're looking to? What are the critical milestones? Developing project plans complete with work breakdown structures. And so the idea of documentation kind of leads me to this quote that, you know, I think folks will say that this weakest ink is greater than the strongest memory. And you just want to document that, because if you're a team of one, and, you know, for anyone listening, or at least is at an earlier stage company, you probably are a team of one. Whether you like it or not, you're actually a central point of failure for the business. And that's not what we want to be by any means, but it's just the necessary evil for how fast businesses want to move.
No, you're 100% right. And it's something that I think about all the time. It's like, you know, no one ever really wants to do any, no, succession planning is not really a fun exercise, right? And, but it's a necessary one. And I think it's a really, it's really interesting in revenue operations, right? Because you're often in, especially in early stage companies, you're almost always an army of one. And, but the idea is, and I think what's really exciting, and I know you and I have talked at length about this, is just this evolution and the rise of revenue operations, right? In terms of how do you get a seat at the table earlier? How is it, you know, how do we get to a point where it's not just hire three more sales reps, it's maybe hire two sales reps and a revenue operations person. So early on, you know, you're kind of building for scale. A common question is like, how do you build a team? How do you build the revenue team? And I think setting yourself up for success, one of the key things in that is documenting your processes, right? And it's always, because you're right, you want to run as fast as humanly possible. You just want to get to the next thing. And the list is usually 3 days long in terms of stuff you have to do. You know, you're tackling forecasting, you're tackling onboarding, you're tackling, you know, territory assignment, maybe you're doing comp stuff. You know, it's you're all over the map. But if you take that little bit of time to document, the second you then have to bring someone else on, boom, now you have this whole, you know, sort of manual of things to hand off to someone else. And that makes you, that's going to make your life exponentially easier, you know, as you hopefully, you know, scale up and grow, you know, grow your team.
So you had a quote unquote typical path to RevOps. You played football, mm-hmm. you went into sales and moved into RevOps. How do you get into RevOps? If someone were to come to you and ask you that question, you know, what advice would you give them?
You know, it's funny. That's such a good question. And you and I think are such good, like, contrasting stories in that, you know, you have a much more of a cornucopia of skill sets and experiences, right? You've been a consultant, you've been in finance, you've done all these really, really awesome things. And it gives you a perspective, certainly, you know, a spectrum of a viewpoint. I think for me, the biggest thing that I've recognized over my career is just having a curiosity, right? Like I think revenue operations folks, no matter what background you come from, because you can come from any background, is like having that, the curiosity and the drive to want to solve problems. Because I mean, at its core and its essence, revenue operations is solving problems, right? You're the nerve center of a go-to-market business, right? You're connecting sales, marketing, customer success. You're interfacing with marketing, you know, and finance, and you know, whatever other orgs are there. You have to be able to speak everybody's language. You have to have that curiosity to kind of meet people where they are and learn what they're trying to accomplish. You know, to kind of call back to our earlier point, like you've got to figure out how to pull out the requirements. You've got to figure out how to, for you to be successful, you've got to be able to distill that stuff down. And so for me, when I think about what has served me well in revenue operations, it's having an intellectual curiosity and wanting to be a problem solver. You know, because above and beyond that, there are so many resources out there. And I know you're a huge proponent. I've seen you post about this a million times, but you can essentially teach yourself every skill set that you're going to need to have in revenue operations, right? You have Salesforce Trailblazer, which is free. And I would recommend to anybody who's, you know, new to the Salesforce game and new to the kind of the operations space, you've got, you know, Google, YouTube, there's Udemy, there's, you know, and then you have all these other resources that were available. You know, you have Revenue Collective, you have Wizard of Ops, like there's all these things out there, and there's all these resources that are just available to you that, you know, from a tactical skill set perspective, like you can learn all that. And I think the most important stuff is just being curious and wanting to learn and being willing to really be open to a diversity of thought. I think those are the two most important things to me when I think about revenue operations.
Now, when you fell into that ops role, that sales ops role, mm-hmm. did you have to hand raise, or Did your boss kind of tap you on the shoulder and say, hey, would you be interested in doing this?
It was a little bit of both, I would say. I was kind of feeling my way through building the CRM and building Salesforce out and sort of building out our sales playbook. And, you know, it was a bit of it was just falling into it, which is like, oh, we don't have any of this stuff. And so, you know, I was sort of not raising my hand, but I was just doing it. Like, this is, it needed to be done. And again, when you're an army of one, you become all things. You're writing playbooks. You're doing all sorts of crap. But I think, like, as I've gotten further and further in my career and sort of moved up and up, I definitely have seen a shift in like, not necessarily being raising my hand for projects per se, but definitely raising my hand for revenue operations seat at the table, right? And like revenue operations being a driver of strategy versus the dreaded data cleanup or the onboarding team or the trainers or the, you know what I mean? Like there's a whole bucket of misnomers, I think, that revenue operations gets lumped on them. And so I think where I find myself really hand raising is for the value of revenue operations and sort of saying like, hey, when there are situations where people don't know where responsibility should live. And a lot of times when there is that sort of gray unknowing, it's like that's oftentimes what falls on revenue operations. Cause again, it's like the connector where it's not clear cut and defined from any proverbial sense, but I think that's where I've seen myself do a lot more hand raising is like, this is where revenue operations can be immensely impactful. And this is the value of us is like, hey, we can, you know, when it comes to building a playbook, we're the ones that really can drive home not only the playbook from a sales perspective, but also from a marketing perspective, customer success perspective, and making sure that all those things talk and are woven together really nicely. So I think that's certainly where I've definitely done more hand raising.
So you talked about starting off with the playbook and Salesforce administration. Mm-hmm. Now that you're at Yelp, you've had an opportunity to probably see a more mature infrastructure and technology stack. As a RevOps leader, what is important in terms of assessing and bringing in the technology infrastructure that is relevant for the business?
Yeah. So I think there's a couple of things that are really important. I think number one, having an understanding of your sales motion, right? Are you a product-led organization? Are you more of an SDR and lead-based organization? You know, how is your business running, I guess? That's, I think, part of understanding, because what your sales process looks like, what the customer life cycle looks like, is really important in understanding where you should be investing your technology. In coming into Yelp, there was an existing ecosystem. And so I think there's two buckets, you know, either A, you're in an earlier stage company where you don't have a really robust ecosystem and you're faced with this, hey, do we buy, do we build? What do we invest in first? What's important to us? Or, you know, a later stage, much larger org where you have a much more sophisticated tech stack, you have the resources to do it. And so I think the approaches to each of these is different. So starting with the more robust one, which is what I'm in now, is I think it's a really healthy exercise to have an ongoing audit cadence. And what I mean by that is literally listing out all of your tech stack and listing out all of the features. And I think and all the things that you can do with it, because what's really interesting right now is we're in this world, and I would love to get your take on this, where we have tech stacks and you have platforms that do 20 different things, right? And there's so much overlap. And so I think number one, you just go in and you prioritize and you see how many of the platforms do I have offer some sort of email cadencing? How many? And then within that, I think you can start to identify, all right, where's my overlap? I think it's also really important to keep in context, what is your most critical system, right? And in a lot of cases, that's Salesforce. And so I think a really good exercise and a really good tip or approach to doing an evaluation of your tech stack is whatever you're paying for your Salesforce or whatever you're paying for your most critical system, you should never exceed that on a per seat basis, like as a cost ever, right? That's your high watermark. So, you know, that helps when you're looking at new systems, you know, new systems. Say you're looking at, you know, I don't know, a Gong or, you know, some other, you know, sales enablement or sales engagement platform. You can be kind of transparent with the sales rep and say like, hey, I'm paying, I don't know, $100 a seat for Salesforce. I'm not paying $170 a seat. Just again, I'm pulling numbers out of the air here, but I'm not paying $170 worth of seat for something that does half as much, right? So it helps for you to calibrate the worth and the value and the criticality of each of the pieces of your tech stack. Because I think that helps to make an objective decision about it, where you're just looking at it and saying, okay, if I'm just stack ranking on a criticality, here's my systems, here's how they line up. And then you can really start to calibrate on what do you need, what do you not need? Can you get rid of stuff? Do you need to add? Do you have holes? You know, et cetera, et cetera. I think that's always a really good exercise to have when it comes to, you know, assessing your tech stack.
It's almost as if we wanted to keep the patient alive, there's a core. And you start pointing to what are our systems of record, essentially, meaning that you mentioned that criticality. If criticality is measurable in some method or way, that whatever falls over the line as highly critical, non-negotiable, can't operate the business without this. That is bar none. Your watermark, your baseline, and then anything else around it essentially creates a willingness to pay ceiling for any additional add-ons. I think that's a really thoughtful way to approach. You know, how would you actually build out your systems for any business out there?
Yeah, and I think you're right. I think it makes it to a certain extent simplifies the equation, right? Because ultimately, if you're like me, I love new technology. I think it's one of the coolest parts about revenue operations is, you know, you're sitting basically in the nerve center of all the marketing stack, all the sales stack. And I mean, we've seen it, you know, in the past 5 years, it's exponentially grown. And so just seeing all the stuff that's out there, it's you could literally sit and look at a new platform every day. And it's cool to see the new new bells and whistles. And it's really, really, you really quickly go down a hole where you're like, wow, this is the coolest technology. We have to have it. And like figuring out a way to objectively orient and remove your feelings of, this is a cool new toy and a cool new gizmo from, is this going to make an actual business impact, is really important. Because, you know, then that I think keeps you away from the, you know, now we've got 30 different platforms and we've got, you know, a variety of usage rates and we're like, wow, we don't know what's going on here. And, you know, at the end of the day, it makes your life feel a little bit easier as revenue operations. You want to keep your tech stack as tight as you can, right? Like you don't want to get to a place where you have 50 platforms, because that's 50 platforms for you to maintain and you to keep tied together and you to keep the data clean with and flowing through. And there's just a lot there that, you know, you can make it easy on yourself.
There's a phrase that I've been bandying about recently, which is technology seduction versus technology reduction. You know, it's this idea.
I love it. Yeah, no, your ability to coin a phrase is unbelievable. Like the frameworks and just the sayings that you have always blow my mind, and it's tip of the hat to you. But you're right. It is so easy to get to a place where you just want to have everything. You want to have every tool. You want to have every gizmo. And I think there is an elegance in having the right tech stack, right? And then just that really, really rock solid tech stack. And it brings up an interesting point. You know, earlier in my career, one of my bosses who, you know, to this day is still a mentor of mine, Tom Ury, he would always challenge me to build for the unknown. And sort of what he meant by that was, you know, Salesforce, everything that's being built for Salesforce right now is being built for the most recent version of it, right? And so the further and further you get away from that, you know, stuff changes. And so his thing was always, we have no idea what's coming out 5 years from now, but we need to build a system that can account for it, right? So one of my approaches was, how do I stay as out of the box as possible? How do I do as little customization as possible? Obviously you still got to make the stuff work, but you know, how do you build for essentially a platform that may or may not ever come to be, but if there is some game changer 3 years from now, how do we build a system that we can easily plug that into? And I think a lot of that lies in simplicity and in the ability to interchange systems in and out, because that's the other piece. And again, curious for your thoughts on this one, but you know, if you build Salesforce in such a way, or any platform in such a way, you almost handcuff yourself to it, right? Because the pain of removing it is there is an inflection point where it's like, well, we got a bad system on our hands, but the process of fixing it is worse. You know, it's even more expensive. So now you're just saddled with it. And that's a really bad spot to be in.
Woe to every marketing agency that built their business off of website development in Flash until HTML5 came out and kind of railroaded their entire architecture. The interesting thing is, I love your idea around, you know, building for forward compatibility and building as out of the box as possible. And, you know, I think about the scales of Salesforce, out of the box validation rules, workflows, process builders, Apex, custom development outside of Salesforce. And you really want to try to, you know, stay in the box as much as possible. But even then, who knows, maybe Salesforce will just wholly and completely just get rid of all those core functionality. So what's safe may not be safe. Kyle, we have this segment called the Rorschach test. I'm going to say a few words and I'd like to hear kind of the first thing that comes to your mind.
Sure.
All right, let's go. So personalization versus relevance.
Customer experience is the thing that comes to mind.
Product-led growth.
The future.
B2B versus B2C.
Enterprise versus high velocity.
MQL, real or not?
Isn't that the $1 million question? I would say real.
PQL.
You got me stumped on that one. I'm not sure. I'm not sure I have a thing that comes to my head.
Deal velocity.
Absolutely critical to forecasting.
Full cycle versus SDR assist.
That's a good one. SDR assist. I think of. Teamwork is the first thing that comes to mind there.
Win-loss reviews.
Critical to forecasting.
Forecasting.
Art and science.
All right, last two. Pipeline management.
The ongoing pursuit of something that's imperfect.
And is cold calling dead?
No, I don't think so. You and I could probably talk on this one for an hour. Do you think cold calling's dead? I'm kind of curious.
Heck no.
Yeah, I think it's going to be fascinating because how we engage, right? How like the art of cold calling, like in its traditional sense, I think is going to be tough because, you know, any phone you hit, like I don't even look at anything number I don't know. It's just, or it just goes to spam. But I think there are so many avenues that are not maybe your traditional cold calling, but are going to fall into that same muscle, that same cadence, you know what I mean? Like that same action that are fascinating to me that I don't think it's never going away. Like we're never gonna, you know, get to a point where cold calling's dead. It's just gonna continue to evolve and evolve.
So Kyle, where can our listeners find out more about you?
LinkedIn is the best way. I'm pretty active on LinkedIn and I'm also a part, as are you, of Revenue Collective. You know, I'm always open to connecting with folks. You know, you can, like I said, you can contact me through LinkedIn, but love chopping it up with folks, yourself included. It's always a pleasure to pick your brain about stuff. And I think really it's been exceptionally uplifting and really, really exciting to see all these different avenues in which revenue operations folks are supporting each other, you know, and just being able to be resources and really being an open book. Cause like, that's the other thing I would say about revenue operations is, very likely you have not come across something that someone else hasn't, or someone else isn't experiencing the same thing. And I have seen there's this just tremendous openness to want to collaborate. If I have a question, I've on multiple occasions texted you and be like, hey, what do you think of this? What do you think of that? And I have a list of people that I do that with. And it's just such a collaborative and sort of rising tide raises all boats type of environment. So I'm happy to be a part of it and happy to support it in any way that I can.
Well, my hope is someone cracks open this episode, finds a little bit of gold that they can apply to their day-to-day. And it's all because of you, Kyle.
Appreciate it. I appreciate the opportunity. You know, it's always great to talk.